Thank you so much. How about Mark Letiri on the guitar? That's Bobby Sparks and Sean Martin over there on keyboards. Okay.
WRCT Pittsburgh. No one is as excited about Flaming Cheese as we are.
Hi, this is Greg Keeler with Blue Rodeo here, 88.3 FM, WRCT, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
If you could hear me now, if you could hear me somehow, if you could hear the words that I'm thinking about a world on fire, good thoughts lost in the mire, and it seems like no one's listening. If you could see me now, if you could see me some, you could see the world where we're living, where the money's in charge and the black coal barge, and there's no more fish to be fishing. If you could hear me now, if you could hear me some, you could hear what my soul is screaming.
WRCT in sound from way out.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Let's start today with mass shootings. You know, whenever there is news of a specific mass shooting, understandably, the focus becomes the facts of that particular situation. When we had the Buffalo mass shooting where this 18-year-old was targeting black people, this was in Buffalo, New York, not this past weekend, but the previous one, we immediately, understandably, correctly spoke about the details of that incident. Where did the individual come from? What were the motivations of the individual? Who were the victims? What was the response? What has been the political response? And on and on. And whenever we do that, we often will lose the perspective that there are so many of these mass shootings in the United States that it would almost be a full daily podcast just to keep up with the mass shootings that are taking place in the United States. Now, I spoke to a couple of people yesterday, just casually texted friends and said, hey, I'm researching for a story I'm doing. If I just asked how many mass shootings have there been in 2022 so far without looking anything up, what's your sense? And many of them wrote back something like, well, I'm aware of like three or four specific ones that like made the news to the threshold that I was aware of it. So there's probably been like 40 or 50 because we have a huge mass shooting problem here in the United States. We have had, as of yesterday, 210 mass shootings in the United States so far. It's only May. It's only May, and we have had 210 mass shootings. Never mind individual shootings, as well as shootings in which two, but not more than two people were injured or killed. Remember, if one person shoots two people, by most metrics, that's not considered a mass shooting. You could argue that it should be. But depending on the archive or statistics you look at, it only is considered a mass shooting when three or four people are injured or killed. And bearing that in mind, if you go to the Gun Violence Archive and you can download a spreadsheet of this, you will see 210. Actually, in fact, I believe the number is now 211. Since I last looked at this, there was a mass shooting yesterday in South Carolina, North Charleston, where 5 people were injured. So it is now 211 mass shootings in the United States. Every single one of these is a story that impacts many people, families, friends, coworkers, etc. If we pick a random one of these, just for example, the second most recent one, which when I looked yesterday was the most recent one. When you look at that one, that was in Goshen, Indiana, by the way, a place I've been to. And it took place on Rosemere Court. When you look at the victims, there was a 17-year-old male who was killed. There was a female injured, another female injured, another female injured. And the suspect is believed to be a 20-year-old male who was also killed, according to the information that we have here. And for every single one of these, typically there is a media source that you can look at. In this case, the media source takes us, looks like it's a Facebook page, a release from the Goshen Police Department talking about how an emergency call was received that a shooting took place at a residence. 5 individuals were injured, according to the report. EMTs were sent out. 2 injured females were airlifted to a trauma hospital in Fort Wayne. 1 was taken to a hospital in South Bend. An injured male was taken to Goshen Hospital, but has been declared deceased, and 1 male was pronounced deceased at the scene. Every single one of these is a story that affects so many people's lives, and most of these don't even make national news. And one of the things I've talked about before, NPR also about 9 days ago did a story on this. At that point, 9 days ago, there had been 198 mass shootings. Now we're already up to 211. Whenever there's a news story that doesn't have a clear beginning, middle, and end, it often will not make it into the news, or whenever there's an event that like that. So when we talk about, well, there was a shooting where one person was killed and it gets more attention than thousands of people in the United States or however many are going hungry. Well, whereas that's a major story. How do we still have hunger in a country as rich as the United States? Well, it comes to what makes a good story for corporate media. And I've spoken about this before. Terrorist attacks, weather events, individual shootings, votes on a particular bill. Those have a defined, typically, beginning, middle, and end. They have very clear players. There are very clear sort of goalposts for what is the coverage expected to be and how are these topics discussed. Regular corporate media is not really set up to talk about hunger in the United States in an ongoing way. Okay, there's a food stamp bill, Democrats for, Republicans against, whatever. But the news, corporate for-profit news, is not really set up to talk about that. Malaria in Africa, dysentery, and these are not the types of stories that corporate media is designed to address. And even when you look at the politics, the political stories, the intractable and corrosive nature of how we select our representatives and then how they don't really represent our interests, that's an ongoing and major story. Arguably, it's one of the fundamental stories about how American politics is broken. It doesn't really have a clear beginning, middle, and end. And as a result, it's why you often don't see much about it in corporate news. So to go back to the beginning, 210, 211 now mass shootings in the United States, and it is not even Memorial Day. Hey, this is just the best. This is another reminder of how all of these supposed principles of the modern Republican right are meaningless to them. They only care about what is good for me right now. As you might remember, when we were getting closer to the 2020 election, it was Republicans united that mail-in ballots are bad. Mail-in ballots help Democrats. Mail-in ballots allow Democrats to commit fraud, and on and on and on. And in the immediate aftermath of the 2020 election, it was Republicans saying, we've got to stop the count or start the count or count these correctly or that. But the point was, the mail-in ballots are bad for democracy. They could be criminal. They are fraudulent. And they just must be stopped because that's what the Democrats do. Well, now they are still counting ballots in the Pennsylvania Republican Senate primary. This was the race we covered live last Tuesday, and which on Wednesday I told you Mehmet Oz is just slightly ahead of Dave McCormick, but they're still counting ballots. Well, now Republicans, candidates and the parties are arguing amongst themselves. Count the mail-in ballots. Don't count them. Include these. Throw these out because they don't have a date on them. They don't care about the principles. All they care about is what helps me right now. There's an article from the New York Times. McCormick sues to count undated mail-in ballots, trailing Oz in Pennsylvania Senate race. Wait a second. Hold on. So in 2020, the problem was any irregular ballot, like it doesn't have a date on it or whatever the case may be, you've got to throw it out. That's bad stuff. Now, the undated mail-in ballots are believed to be likely good for Dave McCormick and not so good for Mehmet Oz. Oh, now we've got to sue. We'd better count those mail-in ballots, even if they don't have a date. As irregular as it is for the ballot to not have a date written in, we must make sure that the will of the voter is represented and that the vote is counted. But you guys were just against that. David McCormick is trying to close the gap against Mehmet Oz in the undecided Republican primary contest. This is Neil Vigder in the New York Times. In a lawsuit filed Monday in Pennsylvania, the Republican Senate candidate David McCormick demanded that undated mail-in ballots should be counted in his primary race against celebrity physician Mehmet Oz, whom he trailed by less than 1,000 votes. McCormick asked the Court of Pennsylvania to allow election officials in all 67 counties to accept mail-in ballots from voters who turned them in by the May 17 deadline but didn't write the date on the outer return envelopes. That step is required by law, one that Republicans have fought to preserve. It's been Republicans in Pennsylvania and other states who have argued for 2020. If there's no date written on the outside, you put that in the trash, you cover it in rocket fuel, and you burn it. We don't count it. But now all of a sudden, McCormick wants it counted. Okay. Arguing the ballots were indisputably submitted on time. They were date stamped upon receipt and no fraud or irregularity has been alleged. In the McCormick campaign's lawsuit, Mr. Hicks, who is this lawyer, took the opposite view of mail-in ballots, saying the election boards in Allegheny County in western Pennsylvania and Blair County have balked at counting the undated ballots. Those counties, he said, were delaying taking action until after Tuesday when they are required to report unofficial results to the state. The board's refusal to count the ballots at issue violates the protections of the right to vote under the Federal Civil Rights Act and Pennsylvania Constitution. Whoa, that's pretty serious. Now, you might remember that the very same lawyer was part of a group of lawyers that Trump hired to challenge mail-in ballots in the 2020 election. The same lawyer now saying count all the ballots was part of a group of lawyers saying don't count them in November of 2020 when he worked for Donald Trump. As a reminder, here is Dave McCormick on election night saying, hey, you know what? We've still got mail-in ballots coming. We might still be able to win this thing.
Now we're going to win this campaign. We're going to win this campaign. And tomorrow, right now, we have tens of thousands of mail-in ballots that have not been counted.
Right.
That are going to need to be counted beginning tomorrow. And so that's, unfortunately, we're not going to have resolution tonight.
Okay. So now mail-in ballots are good. What is the takeaway? The takeaway, these people are pathetic. They don't really have principles. It's whatever's good for me. Whatever is good for me is the principle. We'll see ultimately who wins this one. But just remember this. Just remember this when they start making all sorts of claims about mail-in ballots in November. Monday, Memorial Day, we're doing our one-day membership special. Make sure you're on my newsletter at davidpakman.com. If you are, you'll be notified Monday morning of how to take advantage of this great one-day membership discount. Let's talk next about some incredible statements from Marjorie Taylor Greene and Tucker Carlson, both of which relate to really serious political and media issues here in the United States. First of all, radical, repugnant, retrograde Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene complained that white supremacists are being targeted when it comes to mass shootings and domestic terror. You have to see this to believe it. Marjorie Taylor Greene saying, you know, there's all these different shooters and people doing bad stuff. Some of them are black and all this different stuff. And they only want to target the white supremacists. But as usual, it's all in the details. Listen to what she had to say, and then we'll talk about it.
Bail. I mean, not on the jail, on the bill for this domestic terrorism new bill that came out for the Department of Justice. And Jerry Nadler was on the House floor, and he was talking about white supremacy, and right. He was bringing up the terrible shooting that happened in New York, but totally ignoring the shooting that happened in California that I think involved an Asian man that was the shooter, totally ignoring the guy that drove his car, black man that drove his car through a Christmas parade, killing people and was a racist himself, completely ignoring the black man that did the New York subway shooting. You know, these people are all guilty of these crimes, and it's not about race. It shouldn't be about race, but they're clearly racist as well. So white supremacy shouldn't be the main target. We should be more concerned about the illegal invasion at the border, the crime happening every single day on our streets, and especially in cities like Chicago. We should go after criminals that break the law and not pursue people based on their skin color and how they vote.
Okay. Now, of course, people aren't being pursued by the criminal justice system based on their skin color or how they vote. But let's go through her claims one by one. She mentions the California Asian man shooter. That was a shooting at a Taiwanese church in California. One person was killed and five were wounded. It's being investigated as a hate crime. And it was a 68-year-old shooter, motivated by the political tensions between China and Taiwan, according to authorities. There's no media narrative. There's no political narrative in the United States meant to activate or inspire any kind of tensions between Chinese and Taiwanese people living in the United States. You don't turn on Fox News and see instigative rhetoric about China and Taiwan such that it would inspire shooters or whatever the case may be. There's really no conversation to be had there about American political discourse and American media. We every once in a while will say, oh, what is China thinking about when it comes to Taiwan? But there is no big media political story that in the United States would have inspired this shooting. So why would we be talking about it in the same terms? Then Marjorie Taylor Greene says, well, the black man that drove his car through a Christmas parade who was a racist. OK, that's the Waukesha Christmas parade attack from November. The driver of an SUV plowed through a Christmas parade, killed six people and injured 62. Terrible, tragic incident. And we know that the perpetrator used the same car to hit his ex-girlfriend 21 days earlier. It's believed that the driver acted alone, didn't even know anyone at the parade, wasn't targeting any particular group of people at the parade. The motive is not equivalent. It is true that the guy was black. It's true that he had a history of social media posts that were anti-Semitic and advocated for violence against Jews and white people and wrote positive stuff about Hitler. Disgusting person, no doubt about it. There is no evidence that the incident is related to the ideology. There just isn't any evidence. So why would we talk about it in the same way? Lastly, Marjorie mentions the New York subway shooting, who was also a black man. That was 6 weeks ago. That's the 2022 New York City subway shooting. Reportedly, the man is a 62-year-old black nationalist who put on a gas mask, threw two smoke grenades, and fired more than 30 rounds from a handgun. Nobody died. Fortunately, 29 were injured. Horrible incident. The believed shooter would sometimes post homophobic rants online misogynistic rants online, rants targeting blacks, Hispanics, whites, all sorts of different things, anti-Semitic, believed link to black nationalism. Great. Talk about it. Talk about it. No manifesto, but we've got some of this a paper trail, for lack of a better term. Black nationalism is a tiny movement. There's no political party pushing the ideology of black nationalism. That's it. I mean, I'm against any violent movement, but there is no story here like what happened with the Buffalo shooter, where we have seen years now of a combined political and right-wing media effort to talk about this exact ideology that was in the manifesto. Lastly, Marjorie mentions, and we should focus, if we really want to talk about this stuff, we should be focusing on the illegal invasion at the border. Immigrants, documented and undocumented, commit crime in the United States at a lower rate than domestically born citizens. So by the math of it, that is not where you should focus if you want to stop crime in the United States, because both documented and undocumented immigrants commit crime at a lower rate than American-born Americans, for lack of a better term. So it's a weird thing to insert into the discussion. So why are white supremacists being targeted? Well, they're being targeted because law enforcement and our intelligence agencies have indicated this is a major threat. And we quite literally found the manifesto of the Buffalo shooter, where he was parroting the exact stuff that we've been hearing on Tucker Carlson and elsewhere for years now. That's why, Marjorie. Speaking of Tucker Carlson, we've talked before about projection. When they talk a lot about something the left is doing or should do, really, we should be asking ourselves, aren't they the ones that are doing it? And Tucker Carlson is now calling for Democrats to de-escalate their rhetoric, because it might actually lead to, you know, anything from real world violence to extremism. Tucker, that's what you're actually doing. And in fact, when Tucker's rants appear verbatim in the Buffalo shooter's manifesto, you know that he's desperate to push attention anywhere else that he can. It's projection, or the pot calling the kettle black, or, you know, whatever analogy or metaphor you want to use. Take a listen to this from last night.
Because rhetoric has its own internal logic. You've
right.
experienced it. You can talk yourself into things. We've all done that. Democrats are doing it right now. And what they're talking themselves into right now is, quote, something worse. It's scary.
Uh-oh.
It is time to pull back. It is time to de-escalate. Otherwise, this is going to get really ugly really soon.
Well, it did get really ugly really soon. A guy just went to Buffalo to search for black people to shoot because he believed in the great replacement or white replacement theory, which Tucker and other of his right-wing media cohorts have propped up. He's talking about the wrong people. You know, it's almost like he's saying these satanic pro-pedophile Democrats who are desperate to forcibly inject you with a vaccine that's killing hundreds of people, those people need to tone it down because the rhetoric is getting dangerous. No, the rhetoric is coming from their side. And one of the most notable kind of narcissistic traits is these extreme double standards that include projection and accusing others of that which they are actually guilty of doing. It's one of the many tactics that's often used by narcissists and abusers and manipulators and on and on and on. Their rhetoric already incited an insurrectious riot on January 6, 2021. They talk about dangerous illegals against whom we need to be protected, blah, 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 when undocumented and documented immigrants commit crime at a lower rate than Americans. The constant gun rhetoric, we might need Second Amendment solutions. We might need to be ready to take up arms against whoever. Talk of civil war, which we will talk about a little bit later, and the belief that they harbor that increasingly violence is acceptable in order to achieve political results. It's coming from their side, save the occasional, you know, eco-terrorist or whatever. It's almost all coming from their side. We'll have these clips on our Instagram, which you can find at David Pakman Show. We're continuing our conversations with a number of different candidates running in these 2022 midterm elections. And today I'm going to be speaking with Bobby Payton. Bobby is a Republican running for election to the United States Senate to represent Illinois, and Bobby's worked as a portfolio manager. He's on the Republican primary ballot in Illinois on June 28th. The winner of that primary will face incumbent Democratic Senator Tammy Duckworth in November. Bobby, great to have you on. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, these conversations, as many in my audience always tell me, can be so illuminating because I, as someone of the left, want to hear the ideas of people that are Republicans and that are on the right. And sometimes the ideas make some sense and sometimes they don't. And we talk about it and we sort of figure it out and talk through things. So just to start, I've been doing this almost like as a just gut check to start figuring out where people are. So forgive me if the answer to this question is easy. Who's the current president of the United States?
Who's the current president? Well, I guess it's a funny question.
Is it really?
Yeah, I do think it. We live in a very interesting time where there's forces beyond our visibility that
like supernatural.
Not supernatural.
Oh,
there's a group of extremely wealthy, beyond wealthy, like uber wealthy individuals, not just in the United States, but globally.
Okay.
That call the shots on both parties, not just one party.
Okay.
And so it's almost as though there's a bunch of horse trading taking place behind the scenes. And so, you know, from that perspective, I do believe the will of the American people was ignored in 2020. And the person that's in there is the person that these globalists put in. And that's what I would tell you is I have overwhelming proof. I'll actually be releasing proof from about Illinois tomorrow. General Flynn will be in town. I have a fundraiser for my campaign. Ann Vandersteel, Doug Billings, Yovan Pulitzer, Liz Harris from Arizona, Edward Solomon, who's done work, mathematical work, on proving that our elections across the aisle, folks, the uniparty is very real. And frankly, it's undermining you and me.
Okay, Bobby, that's a lot. So let's take it piece by piece.
Sure.
Who are the rich globalists that you're talking about?
Well, there's a corporate class.
Okay.
A global corporate class that exists that considers themselves to have more rights than any individuals within any nation state.
Who are they?
CEOs of major global corporations.
But can you name some specific people?
So, like, for example, think of BlackRock. BlackRock controls $9 trillion of assets through their structure. He's been in control for over 30 years.
Okay.
Who else? Bill Gates is one who parlayed his fortune in Microsoft into other areas.
Okay.
So you can argue that Elon Musk is one who's kind of like leaning from left back to right, possibly right for the first time in his life.
Okay.
That's another one. Michael Eisner of Disney used to be one before he retired.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's always this legacy wealth that we all know exists, like the Rockefellers, the DuPonts, for example. The DuPont family backed the individual running for U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania. There's like 4,000 DuPonts.
And so...
It's not like one boogeyman.
It's a bunch of people. Okay. And so do you trust the results from Pennsylvania from earlier this week where this right wing guy who believes the election was stolen in 2020, Doug Mastriano, he won on Tuesday. Do you trust those results or do you question them?
I think that that the results they're probably manufactured to some degree. Yes. So I think it's across party lines.
So Doug didn't really win.
Well, first of all, here's my question is if we were playing a board game, you and I and two other people and somehow we knew that there was some stuff flawed with the way the game was set up.
Okay.
And we were playing and, you know, one of us ended up winning, right? But we knew that it was flawed massively. Would it really feel like a win?
Okay, you know? But I'm asking a different question, and I love this because we're really getting down to brass tacks here. In the November 2020 election, Joe Biden was awarded the state of Pennsylvania. Do you believe Joe Biden won in 2020 in Pennsylvania?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
And let me explain how.
I'll let you explain it, but I want to just make sure we go sequentially. 2 days ago, Doug Mastriano won in Pennsylvania's gubernatorial primary. Do you believe he actually won?
I think that I have not looked at the data to make that assessment.
Oh.
So I looked at the data with regards to 2020. I actually broke out all 67 counties of the state of Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and I showed how they had destroyed entire last names of voters from both Republican and the Democratic side to create the outcome that they wanted mathematically, and it showed up in the voter registration files in the final result. They literally destroyed 695,000 individuals' names that didn't vote the way their algorithm wanted, and it's a brilliant way to hide their crime. Because
why didn't a single court accept this?
Well, first of all, a couple things. Number one, that information was provided to the Georgia State Senate. Okay?
Wait, hold on. You're talking about Pennsylvania, but now you're talking about Georgia?
Because I released those results. I testified before the Georgia State Senate.
With the Pennsylvania results?
Because those votes were shifted to Georgia.
They shifted votes from Pennsylvania to Georgia.
To Georgia, like a stock portfolio algorithm.
And who did it? People in Pennsylvania or people in Georgia?
Somebody whoever has the power to control the voter registration files and the voting system of those two states did it.
What person would have control over both systems in two different states?
I think that there's multiple entities that probably have the means to do that.
Like so, who?
Let's just say the DNC and the RNC. Maybe they did it together, for all I know.
The DNC and the RNC took control of the Pennsylvania and Georgia systems to shift votes from one to the other. But Biden won both, so what was the point in shifting them?
Because once again, I think they do some horse trading behind the scenes, both parties.
Okay.
And they collude to create the outcome that they agree upon based on these mega donors.
All right. So to go back to the question, who's currently the president? Do you have an answer you can give?
I think that right now in the international arena of the world, President Biden is recognized as the president of the United States.
Do you believe that someone else, like maybe Trump, is actually the president?
I have no information to make that kind of judgment or assessment.
Okay.
So I'm not living in a delusional world. where somebody is thinking, you know, there's some kind of like secret plot.
Shadow presidency, you know? or something like that.
No. I don't believe in any of that.
I do
agree with what Elon Musk said, which he said, whoever controls Biden's teleprompter is really running this country.
Okay.
I agree with that statement.
There are so many fascinating things in a Q&A you did with a paper not long ago. Let me actually mention exactly what paper it is. It was a local newspaper, Shaw Local, the Shaw Local News Network. You did a Q&A. It's fascinating. Before we get on to the substance, Bobby, in looking at your answers, you do something that Trump does, which is you randomly capitalize words in the middle of sentences that aren't proper nouns. So like in your answers, you randomly capitalize the word farming and the word chemicals. And I could give you a dozen other examples. Can you help me understand what's with the random capitalization?
Yeah, my wife, it's a big pet peeve of hers. It's a wonderful question. And sometimes, it's very hard because when you write something, you don't always necessarily have people key in on certain words. So I do know that it's not grammatically correct to capitalize. I've had this discussion with my wife plenty of times. And I say I capitalize it because I want to catch people's attention. Instead of italicizing the word or bolding it, I do something that causes them to pause. And so I hope it was effective with you. You know, she thinks it's ineffective to communicate this way.
I agree with your wife. I agree with your wife. It made no, it was such a distraction because I was like, does Bobby think these are proper nouns or what's going on?
Okay. So it's a personality quirk.
Fair.
And, you know, to your point, my wife has brought it up. Others have brought it up. Maybe it's time for me to stop doing that.
Something to think about. Okay, good. Yeah. So now let me ask you another question. In this same Q&A with the local newspaper, when you were asked about January 6th, one of the things you said is you really want Antifa and Black Lives Matter investigated for what happened on January 6th. Do you have any evidence that Antifa and Black Lives Matter are the ones that committed crimes at the Capitol on that day?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure if I linked it right with that question. I might have mentioned it in the same question, but I'd have to double check. I don't have those notes in front of me.
Okay.
But in terms of those two groups, anti-First Amendment, which is Antifa, right? It's a play on words. It's pretty brilliant.
It means anti-fascist.
Well, it means anti-First Amendment.
Well, no, you'd have to – the people who – it's sort of like if you told me my name means something different. If I'm coming up with the name, I'm coming up with it because I know what it means to me, right? Antifa says it's anti-fascist. We have to go by what they are meaning with it, don't we?
Well, I mean, it's kind of funny for you to say that because on the left right now, there's people that identify as being a woman that are biologically a male. And, you know, and they could tell you that they have to have a certain pronoun. So I understand. We're going to agree to disagree on what it means.
Well, right. So you were asked about the riots, and what you said about that was that it was a peaceful gathering manipulated by the political establishment, and you want Antifa and BLM investigated for it.
Yes. Okay. I do not have evidence those two were involved.
Good.
I do believe that people from both sides of the aisle, mm-hmm. the Uniparty, corrupt Democrats, corrupt Republicans, were both involved in staging this incident in a way that if you notice what happened after that event, we never did get to see any disputes with, the floor of Congress to debate the merits of issues that arose in the ballots properly in all these different states. They kind of brush through that much faster as a result of that event.
Well, yes, because they realized that it was going to serve no productive purpose, that at the end of the day, there wasn't really any substantive evidence or fraud, nor a legal mechanism to deny Joe Biden the presidency. And they said, it's the middle of the night. We all want to go home. Let's do what is obviously going to be the correct thing to do.
You know what I'd love to do, David?
Yeah.
I'm going to, if you don't mind, make sure you send me your email address.
Please. Tomorrow you'll send me the evidence.
Okay. I will send you a deck with regards to my presentation on some of the slides from tomorrow.
Fine.
And I'm more than happy if you have a Dropbox.
Okay.
I'm glad to send you some data for you to review from the voter registration files of the five battleground states, the work that I did, as well as my write-ups. And I'll gladly let you read it, debate it. I'm glad to do it.
But Bobby, in terms of my question on Antifa and BLM, you believe people from both sides were involved, but I believe that before you said that, you said you have no evidence Antifa or BLM were involved. That's what you said, right?
I do not have evidence that they were involved. I do think that they are based on other things that I've seen, but I don't have the smoking gun, so to speak. I'm not an investigator. I'm asking that there is an investigation held.
And there have been so many which have found either that Joe Biden won by even more, or like it doesn't sound like you're necessarily satisfied with investigations when they don't go your way. What type of investigation would you accept?
Well, a couple things.
Yeah.
Okay. So number one, when you look at let's talk about the state of Arizona.
Okay.
Right? So Arizona, there's Maricopa was where the audit took place. Mm-hmm. Right. Everybody knows that.
And you were involved with the Cyber Ninja stuff, right?
I was involved with. No, I was not employed during that audit.
Okay.
I did work on the voter registration files.
Okay.
And proved out that there was a set of voters inserted into the voter registration files that can be called upon when needed to sway the results in any particular precinct.
And they all were registered to the same address. Is that correct?
No,
they weren't.
That's not the case that they were all registered to the same address.
Oh,
what happens is in the case. So let's talk about why you need very little to rig an election, especially when you look at the results.
Okay.
If there was an average of about 1,000 people per precinct in this country. So if the vote came out to be 501 to 499, you're talking about what? You're talking about a 2-vote differential, right? 501 minus 499.
Yes.
So now if you wanted to sway that result the other way, from 501 to 409, you only need 3 votes.
Okay.
You need to go from 501 to 502. So 3 divided by 1,000 is 30 basis points. It's 0.3%. So 1,000 goes into 1,000,000 1,000 times. So per million people that voted, 3 times 1,000 is 3,000 votes. So in the case of Arizona, 3.6 million approximately people voted. So 3 times 3.6 is 10,800. You only need to steal 10,800 votes to affect the election if it was 501 to 499 and you put it to 501, 502.
But so this is an imaginary scenario where you're saying okay, all right, go ahead.
No, but here's what I would say. The data is when you mapped out the data across the 700, I think it was 742 precincts within Maricopa. I believe there were 742 precincts, and you calculated what was the number that would be needed in advance to rig the election, and you could generate it before a single ballot was cast, and the numbers came out the way they came out on election day. You would call in the question mathematically, how can somebody come up with the algorithm for how to do this before a single ballot was cast?
What evidence do you have that anybody did that, though? You're just looking at the numbers after that.
I'm more than happy to send it to you. Okay. I'll send you Edward Solomon's work.
It's coming out tomorrow, right?
Well, I was explaining Arizona. Tomorrow I'm going to explain Illinois.
Oh,
so
okay.
So I live in Illinois. I've never exposed Illinois. But okay. I'm going to expose the Senate race for Durbin that took place in 2000 and the Senate race, the U.S. Senate race for Duckworth, my opponent, if I make it through the primary in 2016. And I will show you the data. I will do a video. Actually, I'm not sure if we're going to live stream it, but I will gladly send you my supporting documentation,
please,
my video. And I'll explain how they're modifying the voter registration files and using optimizers as well as random functions that exist in Microsoft Excel to do this. Anybody will be able to replicate what I'm talking about if they have Microsoft Excel.
Okay. Bobby, I've got to ask you, because we are out of time, What evidence, if it could be presented, would convince you that Joe Biden just won in 2020? Is there such evidence, if anybody could show it to you, that would make you say, you know what, Biden won?
I think the evidence that would convince me that Biden won is if you said, Bobby, in your state of Illinois, there's 8.9 million people registered to vote.
Okay.
And of those 8.9 million people, this is how many that, you know, were between, you know, the legal age to vote, you know, 18 plus, and they exist in our society in the form of, you know, there was 6 million tax returns filed, or there was 150, you know, like 500,000 Social Security checks paid into the state, or, you know, 200,000, you know, COVID checks that were cashed. And if I can see the receipts of the economic activity of the state, of who's doing these votes, and it ties out to our federal tax receipts, our federal spend, you know, because I'm not saying, you know, I don't, if somebody's retired and they don't have a tax return, and they still get government money, they still have a right to vote. So I'm all for, like, oh, this is how many received the check that voted. This is how many paid taxes that voted. And then if all of a sudden there's no record that they exist, economically speaking, like that would put this to rest for me real quick. I'd be like, okay.
It seems we have all of that. That's strange. Listen,
no, but
Bobby,
we don't have it. We don't have it cross-referenced with the actual votes that take place in our system at the current time.
Is your assertion that Joe Biden didn't even really win Illinois? Is that what you're claiming?
I don't know if he won Illinois.
You don't know.
I know that he ran. I could tell you right now that in Illinois, based on my research, there's well over 1.6 million fraudulent registrations in the state of Illinois at the present time.
Okay, but so you're saying that even Illinois, which was won by Democrats in 2016, 2012, 2008, 2004, 2000, et cetera, 1996, I mean, you're saying that those were all fraudulent, or just in 2020, the Democrat didn't really win?
I think that we need to look at all the elections going back at least 20 years since the machines entered the scene.
Oh, boy. So you think maybe even like Bill Clinton's win in Illinois in 92 was fraudulent?
I didn't say that. We didn't have machines back then.
Oh, okay. 96? 1996?
The machines came in after this criminal by the name of George Bush. I believe he stole the election from Al Gore. Okay. In Florida with the hanging Chad incident.
But in 2000 and 2004, where Al Gore and Kerry won Illinois, even though Bush had the machines, you think those might have been fraudulent?
Hold on. The machines came in after the 2000 election.
Okay, so 2004.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is that event where George Bush stole the election with the hanging Chad incident with his brother, who was the governor at the time, Jeb Bush. Yeah. That ushered in these machines. And I think ever since these machines have come online, I think it makes it easy to possibly manipulate and steal elections across the whole ticket.
Okay.
And look, the math will show it. I'm very happy. I will send you all of my stuff. And it's all going to be presented tomorrow. I have about 300 plus people coming tomorrow. I invited the press to be there.
Good.
I will open it up for peer review, and people that love math and statistics, they can look at it themselves and see what I'm talking about. And
love it.
If you wanted to talk about it after, you go through it and pick it apart.
I will take a look at it, and then we will go from there. And, Bobby, I have a feeling you're going to take these beliefs to your grave. I don't think you'll ever be disabused of any of these thoughts. I don't think the evidence really matters.
I think that what will play out, but this is what I do. Can I just say this?
Yeah.
When this plays out the way it's going to be meant to play out.
Yep.
My biggest hope about this whole thing.
Yes.
Is that when you have a difference or I have a difference in who we back that goes in, to run for office, that your vote is not diluted one iota and my vote is not diluted.
Beautiful.
And right now, I don't think either one of us, I do not have any confidence that my vote is not being undermined in some way, or your vote might not be undermined in some way. And so I will continue to work to get that solved, because at the end of the day, we're all Americans first.
We are.
I don't care about the left. Look, the godfather of my son is a huge Democrat. He calls Pelosi his girl when he was living out there. He's an airline pilot, and he's the godfather. Last year, I love the guy. I've known him over 20 years. We disagree, but we both want it to be fair, And I think at first he was skeptical. I've sent him information over the past year. He sees it. He's more open-minded to seeing if it truly is taking place. But the reality is in my state of Illinois, they're both in on it, folks. Both the Republicans and the Democrats are doing this to us. And I don't think it was just in 2020. I think it goes back at least two decades.
All right. Well, we're going to look at all of it. We've been speaking with Bobby Payton, who is running for U.S. Senate in Illinois. He is in a primary, which is at the end of June. If he wins, he will face incumbent Democratic Senator Tammy Duckworth. Bobby, illuminating. Quite literally, you're lit up. Your face is completely lit up.
What's going on with that?
I don't know. But it's been an illuminating conversation, metaphorically and literally.
Hey, can I mention to your viewers to check me out at bobbypighton.com or on Telegram?
Yes, and please get us the data on Illinois, and we will look at it very strongly.
Awesome. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much, David.
Thank you. So we're right in the middle of a really interesting confrontation within the Republican Party. This isn't normal. This isn't typical. Former President Donald Trump has endorsed David Perdue in the Republican Georgia gubernatorial primary. On the other hand, Trump's own vice president, Mike Pence, has endorsed Perdue's opponent, Brian Kemp, the incumbent, in that very same Georgia gubernatorial Republican primary. Tonight, we will hopefully know the results of that election. It's not looking good for David Perdue, meaning it's not looking good for Donald Trump's endorsement. But the part I want to focus on today, because we'll have those results tomorrow, is the increased escalation and tension and attacks between Donald Trump and Mike Pence. Most of it, by the way, coming from Trump in the direction of Pence. Yesterday, Donald Trump appeared on the Real America's Voice show outside the Beltway. It's a completely unhinged, delusional show, but a very manic sounding Trump flipped out on Mike Pence in this hysterical interview. Let's take a look at this. And remember, this is not normal. And Trump seemingly turning on almost everyone. Common a move of narcissists. As soon as people are no longer useful to you or loyal to you or willing to do whatever you tell them to do, you turn on them. Take a look.
Well, I'm very disappointed in Mike, as a lot of people are, and he's just very greatly disappointed in me. He had a great opportunity, and all he had to do is send it back to the legislatures.
Now, remember, Trump continues to insist that Mike Pence should have and could have rejected the electoral results on January 6, 2021, and say, states, each of you decide who actually won in your state. Now, unfortunately for Trump, Pence couldn't do that. There's actually no real mechanism. The states had already said, here are our votes. It's delusional, but Trump continues to attack Pence for it.
Them decide, because when you had all of that ammunition, when you had all of those things being said about the election, and you had all of the proof that Peter Navarro and others, many others, were talking about, it would have been very easy to send it back and have them come back. So I'm very disappointed at the stance he took. But that's his, we're a country. It was very interesting. They said he had no choice. But in the meantime, they go and try and change the law so he can't do it. So that means he did have a choice. So we'll have to see when it all happens. But all I know is this, our country has probably never been worse than it is right now. I think we're in the greatest danger ever of a nuclear war. I would have never thought that would have happened. We're in the greatest danger of a nuclear war where it's just...
So as you can see, the question was about the possibility that Mike Pence will run against Trump. And Trump's... He just can't stay focused on one thing. He's talking about nuclear war. He's talking about the impossibility of what he wanted Mike Pence to do. But the important thing is, he essentially at this point has completely turned on his own former vice president. That's not normal.
Great danger. We're not a respected country anymore. So get out there. So important. This is a very, very big election that's coming up.
And by the way, on respected country, this is not a matter of my opinion. It's a matter of global opinion, but it's not a matter of my opinion. Every serious global study of America's reputation around the world shows that since Trump left and Biden came in, respect for the United States has increased in just about every country. Not every country. I think Russia did prefer Trump, but just about every country. Trump's just wrong.
This is going to be big stuff. So, David Perdue, just work hard, David. Work hard. We're going to have a big day tomorrow. John Gordon also, Jody Heiss, Patrick Witt. And you know what? You have to get out there and just vote for every single one, including Jake Evans, because Jake Evans is going to do a fantastic job. So good luck, everybody.
Yep. Mr. President, just one last thing. I just want everybody to know, I never said this to you publicly, but the worst thing Mike Pence did to you on January 6th is not share that fake legal opinion he had with either you or Pat Cipollone, the White House legal counsel. He had it.
This is Peter Navarro, by the way, Trump's former economic advisor, a lunatic in his own right.
Duty to you, sir, as commander in chief, He had a duty to this country. He had a duty to the people of America to show that flawed legal opinion. He did not do that. Instead, he stuck the knife, not in your back, but in your chest. And for that, nobody in this country should consider Mike Pence to be anything other than but retired.
All right. Wow. Guys, this is outrageous. This is bizarre. You don't see stuff like this. And the real question, and my hope is that the answer is yes, is will this rift ultimately work to hurt the Republican voters in the sense of will they stay home? Will they say, well, I don't know. I mean, Pence is endorsing this person, but Pence is bad according to Trump, but Trump is good according to maybe I'll just stay home. I don't know. That's my interest in this is in it being bad for Republicans. We got one new poll about 2022 yesterday that doesn't look good for Republicans. Let's see if it continues. And ultimately, we will know what happens in November. We have a voicemail number. That number is 2192 David P. Here's a caller who wants to know, are Democrats abandoning the Democratic Party because of woke? Listen to this.
Hey, David Pachman or Pachman, first-time caller, wanting to ask you about the left, and wanted you to speak on people kind of leaving the left and turning away from the party because it's becoming a little bit too, you know, woke. An example of maybe what Bill Maher was saying, where, most Democrats, classic Democrats, are staying as the party is moving along. Appreciate it. Big fan. Thanks, David Pachman. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very much struggling with my name. So listen, this is just a question of party registration. If we look at the party registration trend going back to 2004, which is 18 years, you see a similar percentage of the country registered as Democrats. It really hasn't moved very much. Right after Barack Obama won in 2008, you saw a little bit of a spike in the number of Americans who were registered as Democrats. And then you saw it settle back down again. But it's basically been extraordinarily stable for at least 18 years. So when all, you know, there's all these movements that claim all of these people are abandoning the Democratic Party. There was the so-called Blexit movement, black exit of black people leaving the Democratic Party. It's not actually shown in the data. The Democratic Party registration is very stable. Black folks still overwhelmingly voting for Democrats. The claim that the Democratic Party is being abandoned because of supposed wokeism, it's not showing up in any data. And so that's what I go by. My opinion, or whether I personally know someone that has left or joined the Democratic Party, it doesn't really matter. What matters is what does the data show? The data doesn't show that people are abandoning the Democratic Party. We have a great bonus show for you today. An appeals court finds Florida's new social media law unconstitutional. The Supreme Court makes it tougher for inmates to win release from prison because of bad lawyering they say they've received. And lastly, Starbucks is completely exiting Russia, joining McDonald's, and a bunch of other brands. All of those stories and more on today's bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com.
Those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all RDJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
RCT, in sound, from way out.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJ.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
As a nation, we have to ask, when in God's name are we going to stand up to the gun lobby? When in God's name we do what we all know in our gut needs to be done?
I'm here on this floor to beg, to literally get down on my hands and knees and beg my colleagues. Find a path forward here.
As families buried loved ones killed in the Buffalo Massacre, a gunman in Texas shot dead 19 children and two teachers Tuesday at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas. It was the deadliest school shooting since the massacre at Sandy Hook almost a decade ago. Democrats are demanding action on gun control, while Trump and Republican lawmakers are set to address the National Rifle Association's annual meeting Friday in Houston. We'll speak with Nicole Golden of Texas Gun Sense, Michael Spies, reporter for The Trace, and with Manny Oliver, father of Joaquin, one of 17 students killed in the 2018 mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida.
This is not only an issue that happened in Parkland to Patricia and Manuel and Joaquin. Right now, while we're talking, there's another shooter planning to do this. Actually, maybe right now, someone just died because of this.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. 19 children and two teachers were shot dead in an elementary school in Texas in the city of Uvalde on Tuesday. The attack on the Robb Elementary School was carried out by an 18-year-old who attended Uvalde High School. Families have begun sharing the names of some of the victims. They include 9-year-old Uzziah Garcia, 10-year-old Amory Jo Garza, 10-year-old Jose Flores, 10-year-old Xavier Lopez, 10-year-old Annabel Guadalupe Rodriguez, and 2 fourth-grade teachers, Ava Morales and Irma Garcia. Robb Elementary School is a school with about 600 students in just 3 grades, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. The school's about 90% Latinx. Thursday was scheduled to be the last day of class for the year. The school district superintendent, Hal Harrell, spoke Tuesday.
My heart was broken today. We're a small community, and we will need your prayers to get us through this.
The gunman has been identified as Salvador Ramos. He reportedly bought at least one of his guns on his 18th birthday a few days ago. He was shot dead in the school. Earlier in the day, he shot and critically wounded his grandmother. Tuesday's attack was the deadliest school shooting since the massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut, when a 20-year-old gunman shot dead 26 people, including 20 children between the ages of 6 and 7, in 2012. On Tuesday night, President Biden addressed the nation.
As a nation, we have to ask, when in God's name are we going to stand up to the gun lobby? When in God's name we do what we all know in our gut needs to be done?
This shooting in Uvalde came just 10 days after an 18-year-old self-described white supremacist attacked a grocery store in the heart of Buffalo's African-American community. He shot dead 10 people, all of whom were black. On Tuesday, a funeral was held for 65-year-old Celestine Cheney. Today, the Senate will hold a confirmation hearing for Stephen Dettelbach to head the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. The agency has been without a permanent leader for 7 years. In the past, Dettelbach has supported a federal assault weapons ban.